This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn. I'm Charles Entick. Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman Rajesh Vichakaran is here. We'll be talking about something we take for granted every day. All of our computers, smartphones and tablets depend on it. We flip a switch and expect the light to come on. But how many of us know where our energy supply comes from, and do we have enough of it in the coming years? Rajesh is here to tell me about the case of Selangor. He just came back from Germany last week, where he was learning about their energy policy and how they are transitioning from renewable energy, traditional legacy system to renewable energy. So I'll ask him about that later in the show. But before we can get to that, Rajesh, welcome back.
Hi, it's good to be back.
Maybe we can start with that idea, we flip a switch and we get electricity, right? How is it delivered to our homes?
Well, I think a lot of us take it for granted because we have all, especially us younger generation, have grown up in an age where electricity has been there from day one. When we were little kids, we have always had steady flow of electricity to our houses. But basically, we have a number of power plants throughout the country. They are coal-powered plants, oil-powered plants, gas-powered plants, and a few hydroelectric plants. These generate electricity. Then it is delivered to our houses through the national grid. So we have a national grid operated by TNB, and most of the power plants operated by TNB, and some operated by independent power producers. But generally, someone does that work and delivers the power through the transmission lines of our house. We don't generate them in our homes in Malaysia, not yet anyway.
And how much say does the state government has over this process?
Now, this energy issues under the federal government's jurisdictions per se. They govern the legislation and they govern the producers of power and the suppliers of power. But state government has a lot to say, especially when it comes to land matters. So in order to deliver power, you've got to have power plants. So the construction of power plants, all state governments would have a very big say in the approval of these power plants. The construction of the transmission lines that carry power north to south, east to west of this country, state governments will have a very big say. So there needs to be cooperation between the states and the federal government in order to get power generated and power delivered to the homes. Although largely it's regulated by the federal government, the state government plays an important role. I think a lot of us may remember the incident that happened in Rawang where TNB transmission line wanted to go through a village and the Selangor government didn't allow that to happen, and TNB had to reroute their transmission lines around the village. So this is an example of how the state government has a say and has voiced out accordingly and has put its foot down when it comes to issues regarding power transmission. And I think if this whole idea of a nuclear power plant comes up, I think you'll have many state governments saying no to it. They'll put an interesting challenge on the federal government as to where they can locate such a nuclear power plant if they ever come to that stage.
What's the latest development on that? Because we have a nuclear power plant agency set up and we have, I think the federal government has given a go-ahead to proceed with that, right? What's the latest in terms of Selangor at least?
Okay, so Selangor has no interest in a nuclear power plant, just to put it out there. But if the latest, I think it's just now as we speak. In fact, our minister, Nancy Shukri, is leading a delegation to China to look at the live nuclear power plants in China. I would question why China, of all places, to go and learn about nuclear power. We should probably be looking at countries that have a better safety record. But anyway, we have also heard an announcement about a month plus or 2 months ago saying that there's some international report certifying that Malaysia is ready to implement nuclear power. I personally have been skeptical about this, and I think that this last 1 week that I've got a chance to spend with many authorities in Germany looking at nuclear power and renewable energy, I think we need to be very skeptical. We need to be very careful, not just from a safety standpoint, but also from a cost standpoint, because nuclear power can be perceived to be very cheap, but in actual terms, it could be very expensive. So we need to be very, very, very careful before we plunge into something like nuclear power.
So if Selangor were to say no, for example, how can they say no? Would it be similar to how you don't allow the land to be used for nuclear power?
Yes, absolutely. So Selangor could say no, then the federal government would have to look at somewhere else, maybe Pahang or Terengganu or Johor, to place that nuclear power plant if it so desires.
So, and without nuclear, do we know where does Selangor get its energy from? What kinds of energy do we use, the ratio?
Well, we all have a common grid in Peninsula Malaysia, so it's not Selangor per se, but rather all of us in Peninsula. We get more than 90% of our energy from fossil fuels. So this is coal, oil and gas, hydrocarbons. This is the overwhelming majority of our fuel. Less than 10% of the power comes from hydroelectric sources. So that's basically the mix that we are dealing with in Peninsula Malaysia at this point of time. So Selangor would also get the same because it's a common electricity supply. In that sense, we are not very, very green or very carbon friendly because we are getting more than 90% of our fuels from fossil fuels. And that is something that we should work towards reducing. Now, Malaysia produces a lot of oil and gas, so we are a natural source, and that may be make us complacent or make us take the easy way out by using gas power plants, coal power plants, oil power plants. But I think it's time that Malaysia starts to take renewable energy seriously, and we still have a lot of power plants down the line that we need to build because we are a growing country, we are a developing country, our electricity needs is just going to keep growing year on year, and we need to keep on adding capacity. So it's in my opinion that as we continue to grow and develop and need to increase capacity, that increase in capacity should come from renewable energy sources, and we have many ways to explore that.
Right. Because you look at Singapore a lot as well. So how do they address their increased energy consumption? They don't have a lot of land to build power plants.
To be honest, I'm not very familiar with Singapore's power generation structure. But, well, for sure, they don't have nuclear power, though. And you see, the traditional way of generating power through this, let's just call them old power, you know, gas power or coal power plants. They are a station, so you need to get a site, maybe 10 acres, 50, 20 acres, 30 acres, and you build a power plant, and then you build big transmission lines to bring them to all your population, you know, all the cities and towns, and to bring the power there. But when we talk about renewable energy, we're talking about making energy more accessible and putting a smaller footprint to energy. So one example is solar. Now, we can start putting solars on roofs of our houses right now. We can put solar on the roofs of bus stops, for example, on government buildings, stadiums, and we can start generating electricity locally. So when you look at the German experience, they had about 200 power generating units 2 decades ago. But today, they have 1.8 million power generating units. So this is the democratization of electricity supply. Now, renewable energy like a solar panel or a wind turbine, these will not generate the megawatts of electricity as a coal power plant. But these do not also require the same kind of infrastructure and capital costs to set up. So anyone can easily set up a solar installation in their house. Anyone can easily set up their solar panel in their office, in their factory, and by using your rooftop space, by using your idle land space, you can start putting in some renewable energy capacity, and it's the accumulation of all of these installations that can provide a significant energy capacity to the national grid, and basically to all of us who consume power.
Can we treat electricity like how we treat water in terms of like asking people to be more conservative in their consumption patterns?
Yes. Just like water, we should be mindful of the way we consume electricity. We definitely want to encourage a healthier living environment where we minimize our consumption of electricity. I understand that comforts of life is there. In fact, if you ask me to give up my aircon, I think I'll be very hard-pressed to do so. I will admit this. But what I've done 2 years ago is to change from a conventional aircon to an inverter aircon, and that has dropped my electricity bill by 70, 80 ringgit a month. And then after that, I switched my fridge from a conventional fridge to an inverter fridge, dropped my bill by another 50 ringgit a month. So we could opt for energy-friendly appliances, not to give up these appliances altogether. I don't think many people can give up their fridge. Not many people who already have an aircon may be willing to give up their aircon. But by switching to energy efficient appliances, we cut down our consumption, and we cut down the taxing demand on the energy grid. You know, and ultimately, if everyone cuts down by 10%, by using methods to conserve energy in your home. And you cut down your consumption by, let's say, even 10% or even 20%, we delay and we can save on the capital cost of constructing new coal power plants or new gas power plants. And that's something that financially impacts us as a country and as consumers. And it's something that is good for the environment, because these big mega power plants, they do pollute the environment quite a fair bit.
Our phone lines are open. If you have a question for Rajiv about how to lower your electricity bill, you can call us at 7710-9000. You can WhatsApp us at 016-201-9000, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, I'll ask Rajiv about who is to blame if there is a blackout. You're listening to BFM 89.9. You're listening to Live and Learn. Good afternoon. I'm Troy Antik. My guest today is Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman Rajiv Rishakaran, and we're talking about Selangor's energy policy. So just before we left off, Rajiv was just giving us some tips on how you can lower your electricity bill or be more energy efficient in your energy consumption. Our phone lines are open. If you have a question, the phone number to call is 7710-9000. You can WhatsApp us at 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. So we know that burst pipes are to blame for water disruptions. What causes blackouts?
Well, I am no technician, so I'll give you probably a simpler answer on this. But overloading of the grid at certain points, maybe there's been a surge of consumption, as well as maybe some technical failures in that local area. These tend to be the reasons for blackouts. But I must commend TNB that they've been very quick to address blackouts that happen here in Peninsula Malaysia. And I hope they continue to keep the infrastructure in tip-top shape to minimize any equipment switchgear failure or transformer failures that may cause blackouts from time to time. So thankfully, we don't have that big of a problem with regards to blackouts.
Okay. And because we're talking on this topic, do we know what happened to that pipe in Sungai Buloh last week?
Well, it was a case of a burst pipe. We normally have pipes burst in local areas. I think that's the most common that you would hear about or experience. This was one of the rare ones that had appeared on the main line that comes in from our water treatment plant down to our residential areas in the Klang Valley. So it was a big pipe and it served a very big area, and that's why there was a very big disruption. But, you know, as always with burst pipes, Air Selangor is on the ground immediately, and they work round the clock to get it repaired as soon as possible, right, and get the water restored.
And there's no like a backup or diversion where pipes from other places can...
That's a very good point. I think going down the line, there has to be more investment with regards to putting in some redundancy, so that if a water treatment plant fails or there's a pipe burst, there are backups, there are redundancies in the system to cater for these failures. Right now, we are playing a lot of catch-up since the Selangor government took over Air Selangor just about a year and a half ago. So we have already put in nearly R1 billion of investments into water infrastructure, definitely the highest of any state government in Malaysia. There's a lot to catch up with. One of the more immediate catch-ups is your local water reservoir. Each in a housing area, you see this mushroom-shaped thing that's supposed to store water. So it turns out a lot of them are not functional during the period where Shabazz was in the hands of the private ownership. And only when we have taken back the ownership of this company about 1.5 years ago, we started the audit process of all the assets and discovered that a lot of them were not functioning. So if these were functioning in your housing area, even though the big pipe burst, this mushroom in your housing area would have been able to supply your house with water. And that's why not every area was badly affected, but areas that didn't have this kind of reservoirs, they would be affected worse. Oh. So,
and who maintains them nowadays?
So now Air Selangor has taken over. Actually, previously Shabazz was in the hands of Puncak Niaga Berhad, and they were responsible for maintaining all this infrastructure. And now that we have taken it back, So now it's Ice Lango is the parent company, and they have started to get these things repaired.
So I mentioned earlier that you were in Germany to study their energy policy. What can you tell us about that trip, and what can we learn from them?
I think we can learn a lot from them. Now, Germany started this energy transformation program in the late 90s. So it's nearly 20 years in the works, this whole idea of energy transformation. And this was even accelerated further by the Fukushima nuclear incident in Japan in 2011. And that brought the acceleration to the shutdown of nuclear power. So Germany has about 22 nuclear power plants, and they decided that they're going to shut down all of them by the next few years. So they've put in a timeline for every nuclear power plant, when will it be shut down and decommissioned. And they are switching over to renewable energy, and they're increasing the capacity in renewable energy more and more as the months go by. Now, I think Germany has two motives for this. One motive that we will share in common is for the environmental incentives. We definitely want to have a better environment, better air around us, and burning fossil fuel just pollutes the air. And I think that's something that Malaysia should aspire to. We also want to move towards getting our air quality in Malaysia better. The second one is energy security, because Germany isn't a country that pumps up oil like Malaysia, like the Middle Eastern countries. And if Germany needs to continue to rely on oil imports, gas imports to power up their power plants, that's something that may be considered a risk for a country like Germany. So I think that to some extent, that is a motivating factor. Nuclear safety, together with the other environmental concerns, is one that a lot of people in Germany share. And that's why it is one country that was very decisive in saying no more nuclear, and to put an end to nuclear power plants, to decommission them properly, and to move forward towards a cleaner energy environment. I got to visit a village, Fellheim, somewhere just on the outskirts of Berlin. And in this village, they have actually put up a lot of wind turbines, windmills. You would see them if you Google up the internet. They are very, very tall windmills, not the traditional Dutch Holland windmills. And these windmills generate a fair bit of power. They also have a solar farm. They also have biomass, because it's being a rural small town, there's a lot of agriculture activity, and the waste from this agriculture activity is then brought into this biomass plant where energy is extracted and electricity is generated from it. So from these three sources, they have enough energy to power up the town, and the town has their own power grid, and they're self-sufficient energy-wise from renewable clean energy. And I think this is something that, you know, a small town could do it without, you know, heavy subsidies from the federal government or the state government, but, you know, they managed to do it. And that shows that renewable energy is actually affordable. And the energy tariff in this small town is about 16 cents a kilowatt, we were told, and which is significantly cheaper than in Berlin or other cities in Germany at 26 cents a kilowatt hour. So renewable energy in their case is not only cleaner but cheaper than conventional power. So I think a lot of misconception that we may have before this is that renewable energy is very expensive. I think that has changed. Technology has improved over the last 20 years, and now renewable energy is oftentimes the cheaper alternative. But you will get resistance from the traditional players because, you know, their livelihood is at stake. So in Malaysia, our traditional players would be like the independent power producers, Genting, YTL, and so on, who may resist moves towards moving us towards a high percentage of renewable energy. But I think that's something we should do. If Germany can do it cheaper than conventional power, I think that's a prospect that Malaysia has, that we can actually start producing it cheaper.
Have we reached that point yet where it's cost-effective and productive to have that solar panels on our roof?
So, from what I understand, the answer is yes. And I think that should open the question in Malaysia, where we need to start examining the cost structure in Malaysia. Now, I understand there's a tax on solar panels that are brought into Malaysia. So maybe it's time the federal government abolishes all forms of taxes on solar panels so that installing solar panels on your roofs becomes efficient and cheap and affordable. The second problem that we have is this net metering that we have in Malaysia. So many countries in the world have already established a net metering policy. That means the electricity that you generate offsets the electricity that you consume from the grid. Now, if you consume 200 kilowatts per hour per day, from the grid, and you are generating 100 kilowatt hour, you can offset that. And so you need to pay 100 kilowatt. You offset what you produce. Let's say you're producing more than what you consume. You're producing 500 kilowatt. You're consuming 200 kilowatts. That balance 300, you can sell to the grid and get paid for it. So Malaysia has a net metering system where you can apply for this, but our net metering is handicapped, as in it can offset your bill, but you can't earn money from it. So we should progress to something like what Germany has and what a lot of other countries have that allows you to sell and earn. So if you have a solar panel and we have a hot month and you're generating a lot of electricity and you happen to be away for a couple of weeks, you've gone overseas to visit your kids, you've generated excess electricity more than you've consumed, you should be able to earn money selling it back to the grid. Now, that would incentivize people to get solar panels on their roof fast, much faster than it's being adopted today. So public policy is important. And this is where the government needs to step in to be more progressive in policy so that we can get there. I think another thing that we learned from Germany is that they have a significant portion of the traditional electricity bill that is dedicated to a green fund that is then allocated to purchase power. So Malaysia has the same structure. 1.6% of your electricity bill, if you look at your TNB bill, is going to this feed-in tariff fund. And the feed-in tariff fund is then used to purchase power from clean energy sources. So those who have biogas plants, windmills, solar, when they apply for the feed-in tariff, they sell to the grid for that fixed amount of price, and this feed-in tariff fund is used to fund it. So the more you have, the more contracts or the more renewable energy plants you can commission out there. So Malaysia is at 1.6%. Only 1.6% of our bill is allocated for feed-in tariff. In Germany,
who pays this tariff?
We pay for it because, you know, 1.6% of our electricity bill goes into this feed-in tariff fund, and this feed-in tariff fund is then used to purchase renewable energy from independent producers. So in Germany, about 20% of the bill goes into their feed-in tariff fund, a significantly higher portion. And that money is then used to also purchase clean energy from independent producers. So they've got a higher quota. So today, if you go and apply to set up a solar farm, now if you go on the way to the old LCCT terminal, KLIA, you'll see a solar farm. So if you want to set up a solar farm today, there isn't any more quota left because everyone has already applied for the quota and the quota is finished because you have a limited amount of feed-in tariff funds and you can only allocate quota as per what the fund permit you to pay out. If not, you won't have money to pay it out. So now if you want to open a new solar farm, let's say you have a piece of 10-acre land, you don't want to do farming on it, you want to run a solar farm on it, the quota is full. Whereas if we had a higher percentage, now I think we'd be very cautious on increasing electricity bills at the moment, but just as a comparison, Germany is far more aggressive by having 20% of the electricity bill going into their feed-in tariff fund, and I think that has accelerated the adoption of renewable energy. And I think another factor that is also very important for us to learn is that in Germany, they have decoupled the transmission grid from the power generators. So here we have TNB operating the grid, billing you, as well as generating the power. So when they've decoupled the grid from the power producers, then the grid owner is very, very happy and very ready to take in power from new sources. So right now, when you have the traditional power producers being the same company with the grid, they may be a bit reluctant to plug in your solar farm. They may be a bit reluctant to plug in your biomass generation into the grid. So they may put in non-tariff barriers, you know, a lot of conditions they impose on you before you can actually do the physical connection and start selling electricity to the grid. But if your grid owners are separate from the power generators, then the grid owner is absolutely neutral to all sources of power and be more open, and would definitely work on reducing these barriers. So those are some of the things that we were exposed to. I think those are very important lessons that Malaysia needs to look into towards promoting renewable energy.
But for Germany to set that fund input at 20%, does that mean that their margin was very high, or is it a loss-making?
No. It's basically a tax.
Right.
So your electricity bill goes up.
All right. Yes. Okay.
From about 21 cents to 26 cents a kilowatt hour. So everyone started paying more electricity bill, yeah. So we're able to fund this fund.
So speaking about renewable energy, it's raining very heavily now. We have water and sun, ample of them in Malaysia. But I was reading that the wind in Malaysia is not very feasible to have wind turbine farms. Mm-hmm. And what can we be doing more to maybe harness these sources? Is solar panel farms the way to go, for example?
Well, I think for a start, we can definitely harness this at our rooftops. We've got terrace houses make up the largest quantity of homes in Malaysia, and terrace houses have one big benefit: they all come with sizable roof space. So terrace house roofs could be a starting point.
How much would one of one cost?
This is a very interesting question. So the price can range depending on the size, and but what's also important is that we need to take down these tariff barriers. You know, this whole taxes that are imposed on solar panels, that should really not be the case anymore. We should make these kinds of products tax-free, and so we can get the rollout to happen as fast as possible. So we don't really have to jump in straight into solar farms because not everyone has access to land. But a lot of people who are listening to this show, you have access to a roof, and that could be a very good starting point. The second thing is that we need TNB to change its net metering policy that will allow two-way traffic. So if you are producing more than you consume, you must get paid back. And this is definitely going to incentivize people to get investments done. And the third thing that we should do is Bank Negara should get on board. Let's get the banks willing to loan money for such installations. Now, banks are very happy and willing to loan money to you to buy a car, a depreciating asset. But banks are not ready to give you a loan for you to hook up solar panels on your roof. This has not become the mainstream in Malaysia yet. So we would need some government intervention to get banks on board to make products like this available, maybe with a payback of 3 years or 5 years, to incentivize and to help people to get solar panels up. So solar is definitely something that Malaysia could benefit from because we have a lot of sunlight all year round. So we definitely can benefit from solar. It's true, from what I've read too, that wind may not have such a high potential in Malaysia as other countries do, but we should still be open to exploring that. We have the option of biomass. We have a lot of agriculture taking place, a lot of agriculture activity happening in Malaysia, and we could make better use of the agriculture waste to generate energy. So these are some of the low-hanging fruits that we can jump right in. Now, I'm mindful we're not going to get rid of all the oil, gas, coal power plants overnight. It's going to take a long time to get there. But let's see if we can set a target for Malaysia that moving forward, we don't have to install any more new coal power plants, no more new gas-powered power plants, and that all our increased energy capacity, that we would install renewable energy.
So I'm just thinking out loud here. Can a state government, for example, implement its own green policy, like making new developments, making it a must that they install a solar panel for new apartments, for example, to have maybe a large communal one on the roof where everyone shares in within their management fee, for example?
Yes, to some extent, the state has implemented some amount of green policies. The first one is buildings. Right now, they're not forced to, but they're given incentives to comply with green building indexes. So if a developer wants to get the maximum plot ratio, the maximum allowable building density, then he needs to get the maximum green building certification. So this would mean the building is very energy efficient. And that is something that the Selangor government has been doing for a number of years. So the newer buildings that are under construction today are very likely to be green, certified green buildings. And these would be, they will tax the grid less because they will be more energy efficient. And in fact, they could even be energy producing buildings. So this is where the policy can kick in. The other things that the Selangor government has done is they're talking about using electrical vehicles. I think this is good. This would be even better if our energy is generated from green sources, because if you're burning oil to generate electricity, you might as well burn the oil in the car to some extent. But having electrical vehicle system, you know, the infrastructure, you need to have sufficient charging stations throughout the state, and you need to get that rolled out. Having a plan for that is crucial so that we can be prepared to migrate to this. Now, there are a lot of electrical vehicles in Europe, but not so much in Malaysia. So that's something that we can look into, especially beneficial when we start generating our power from the sun. We have introduced the free bus programs, gotten people off private cars into buses. I think that somewhat has helped. And installing solar roofs on our Selangor housing projects, I think that's something that should be emulated by the private sector as well. So these are some of the efforts that the state government can do and is doing to make the state a bit more greener.
Is this all part of the Selangor Green Technology Action Plan?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And in the news as well, the PJ Mayor, Dato' Mohamad Azizi, said PJ plans to generate 10% renewable energy by 2030. Would you have an idea where is it now, and what must PJ do in order to achieve this goal?
Renewable energy in Malaysia is still very, very low amounts. I think it's very commendable that the mayor, I think he is probably the only mayor to have come out and state a goal of 10% renewable energy, and I must give him credit for that. We have not seen the action plan yet, but I do hope that in the coming months, an action plan must be formulated to achieve this. It's not an unrealistic goal. In fact, 10% is a very realistic goal. I may want to aim for 20 to 30%, but 10% is a very good start.
What was Germany's percentage?
Germany is more than 20% now. So if you want to get 10% renewable energy, you need to have the right incentives for people. So we talked about the various options for incentives earlier. And you've got to have, besides the incentives, you've got to have a lot of educational processes. You've got to have this message communicated constantly to people to create the awareness to people. So PJ has means to do that by, for example, its billboards. So I think PJ billboards can be used. Various events organized by MPPG can be used to have a site education process to create awareness. PJ has already implemented a credit scheme where if your house, there's a point system for you to get a rebate on your Cukai Pintu if you've implemented green initiatives. So that's a policy that's already been put into place. You also get free parking if you use electric vehicle. So these are some of the green policies put into place, and more can be done. So I look forward to hearing from the mayor his plans to get 10% of the energy in PJ to be from renewable sources. I think that's a very good move. It's a good start. Should be emulated by every municipal council in this country.
You briefly mentioned this concept of energy security earlier, and I was reading that this is according to 2010 figures. Malaysia has about 33 years left of natural gas reserves and 19 years of oil reserves left. And if this is true, I guess how we use each and every one of us, how we use electricity matters very much in how much is left and how we generate our power. And because you mentioned earlier, maybe in the previous shows, that we use a lot of water. Can you remind us what that consumption pattern?
So based on data that I can get online, we use around 4,200 kilowatt hours per person per year in Malaysia. If you want to compare with our neighbours, Thailand uses about half of that and Singapore uses about double of that. So we are really in the middle of where Thailand and Malaysia is. We definitely would be able to save energy because I would by looking around, you can see that there is tremendous potential for us to be more energy efficient. So we can definitely work on bringing this number down. But at the same time, I do hope that the economy in Malaysia continues to grow. And by the growth of the economy, more households would be able to afford more luxuries like air conditioning. And that would bound to increase this number. So in the long run, this figure may go up, but it should go up slower. If we go up in a sustainable manner. But if you talk about energy security, oil is a limited resource. Eventually, one day, Malaysia will run out of oil, and then we would be dependent on other countries for oil and gas imports if we are unable to have alternative sources of energy. I think that's why it's very important to start this move on renewable energy. We don't want to be in a situation that we need to accelerate it too fast down the road. Now, if you start today in 2017, we have time. We can ramp it up. We can get people on board. We can get this renewable energy installations done throughout the country. And this infrastructure will take time to roll out. It's not so easy to roll out 2 million houses with solar panel roofs, for example, overnight. It takes time for that to happen. So we need to start early. And the higher percentage that we start using, this higher percentage of this country that relies on renewable energy, the lower our consumption towards oil, and the longer that oil may last us. So, and that's why it's really important. Now, the final thing that I think would have to be said on energy security is that nuclear will never be the answer to energy security, because Malaysia does not have the capacity for nuclear R&D the same way that Japan and France and America will have. Japan, France, America, China, these countries have so many nuclear power plants. They have so much of in-house technology, so much of homegrown technology, and they are able to continue to grow that technology. Whereas Malaysia may be a country with only one nuclear power plant, and that would make us very reliant on a foreign power. So it depends on who builds our nuclear power plant. Malaysia would be somewhat reliant on that particular country for many, many decades to come. And in fact, if you look at the German experience, any nuclear power plant that we start, we are tied up with it financially for at least 200 years. Because you've got a life cycle of maybe 60 years of the nuclear power plant. You've got 10 years to 20 years from design to construction to building to commissioning that nuclear power plant. You've got many, many decades of decommissioning a power plant. So I visited a nuclear power plant, the first and probably the only ever that I've ever visited. It was the Rheinsberg nuclear power plant, just also on the outskirts of Berlin. And that was a nuclear plant that has been decommissioning since more than 10 years ago. And they are still decommissioning the plant today. The effort taken to decommission a nuclear power plant is very, very intensive. It's costing more money to decommission a nuclear power plant than it costs to build the power plant in the first place. And that's because you don't want your environment to be hurt by the radioactive pollution if you were to just dismantle the plant without proper precaution. So doing it properly, it's very expensive, it's very time-consuming. And that's all this cost that we need to take into account. So if you talk about energy security, if you talk about Malaysia wanting to not be dependent on any one country for oil, like some countries do not want to be dependent on the world markets for oil, for Malaysia, we wouldn't want to be beholden to any country for the nuclear maintenance, because we would not have the capacity to run the same R&D that France and Japan and America has been running for decades. So we would have to rely on one of them. And that reliance would make us indebted to them and make us beholden to them. And that flies in the face of the whole notion of energy security. So Nancy Shukri should explain how is it more secure from an energy security standpoint. I think it's absolutely not. Maybe some final words on nuclear also. We have four costs with nuclear power plants. You've got your design and building costs, you've got your operational costs, you've got your decommissioning costs, and you've got your nuclear waste treatment costs. The operational cost is sexy. I think numbers everywhere, they always cite that it's cheap to operate a nuclear power plant. But we always forget the other three costs. And these other three costs, to build the plant, to decommission the plant one day, and to treat the radioactive waste, these costs can be astronomical. And they should be factored in any decision that Malaysia makes. So, in the end of the day, we should consider total cost, not just for nuclear, but for every possible power generation option. Keep all the options open. And when we look at that, experience in countries like Germany would point to the fact that renewable energy can be very much cheaper in the whole cradle-to-grave life cycle of the project.
So having a top-down green initiative is very good, but oftentimes apathy from the public is a major stumbling block, isn't it? Because, I mean, even getting them to get used to the idea of not using shop plastic bags when they go shop takes a few years to implement. Do you think policy should be more punitive?
I would say when it comes to energy policies, maybe now is not the right time to be punitive. We are just starting to create awareness of renewable energy. And I think now it's the time where we create incentives rather than punitive measures. Maybe there'll come a time, maybe in 20 years' time, that we'll say, you know, we'll start taxing petrol and everyone should use electric cars, and petrol cars will be taxed extra so that we want to discourage people from using unclean vehicles like petrol and diesel vehicles. But I think that's somewhere far in the future. For today, what's important is that we get the right incentives out there and we get the right amount of energy spent on communicating these messages out there. People need to be aware that they can be part of the clean energy movement, and people need to be made aware of how they can get on board. Because today, I think listening to this show, all the listeners out there, you may not know how do you start getting this net energy metering done for your house. You may not know where to start getting financing for your solar panels. So we definitely need to do more to reach out and help people make this transition. So punitive measures may be the next decade, not for now, at least not in my opinion.
There's a question that came through WhatsApp from a listener who asked, why ban biodegradable plastic bags as most of us use them to hold rubbish? Now we have to buy non-biodegradable bag for rubbish, which defeats your Go Green objective?
No, they're not banned. It's the only policy that we have is that any plastic bags given in any supermarket or shops are charged 20 cents. This is to encourage you to use reusable bags. Now, you know, when recycling, you have 3 R's. Reduce, reuse, and recycle. Recycle is always the third option. So biodegradable is good, but it's not as good as reusing a shopping bag. So if you have a shopping bag that you reuse every trip, that's actually better on the environment. That's why there's a policy to discourage disposable bags. But it's certainly not banned, just to get that clarified.
So how can we get on this being more green movement that you talk about? What can we do?
All right. So I think this is a good start to create the awareness. But I hope that moving forward, we quickly fix the couple of barriers that we have. One, the financing. I really hope banks get on board quickly to help with financing, to help people move on to green infrastructure. And the second is the tariffs. The tariffs need to come down immediately to help people. So these are the things that we'll continue to push for to get implemented.
Okay. Rajiv Rishikaran, Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman. We've been talking about Selangor's energy policy. You're listening to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.